Trigger warning. This podcast is intended for men. Not boys, not babies, men.
This is how we disable toxic masculinity.
We need to kill all men.
This pagan patriarchalism that is coming back out of the shadows.
Feminists hate patriarchy.
It's the woman that runs the show and the woman that runs the community and is the backbone of their area.
I'm a nasty woman. A loud, vulgar, proud woman.
Patriarchy.
Male privilege.
Are you saying you have authority over me? Go get your superior!
I personally can't see why egalitarianism would be a bad thing.
The assumption that wives should make babies instead of money is part of the patriarchy.
Don't say hi to strange women you don't know.
Patriarchy.
The patriarchy.
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 Be on the alert, stand firm in the faith, act like men, be strong. And that is 1 Corinthians chapter 16, verse 13. You are on the Fight Laugh Feast Network, and you are listening to The Patriarchy. My name is Tony DePani, and I am joined by my co-host, Pastor Joseph Randall Spurgeon.
Woman, get back in here and make me a sandwich.
Joseph, what kind of sandwich are you eating today? Joseph. Yo. Joseph. Oh, you know what, folks? Joseph's not here right now. It's just me. Why? Well, he has a good excuse. See, Joseph's wife gave birth to their sixth baby last week, and the both of us traveled to the Fight Laugh Feast conference, and if you were there, it was wonderful. And if you were not, you missed out. You need to come next year. I mean, seriously, you missed out. So, because I just got back late last night, and Joseph did too, I am going to put out a lost interview that we have with Eric Kahn from the Hard Men podcast. Yes, we actually have a lost interview because we interviewed a long time ago, then we took a hiatus, and I totally forgot about it. Sorry. Sorry to Eric too. But good news is, I remembered it, and we're going to put it out this week. It's a really good interview. It actually touches on a few articles Eric wrote, because he does write articles as well, and you should go read them. And it talks about, I think, something that is still very, very relevant right now, which is effeminacy in the American pulpit and the consequences of it, and where do we go from here? So, if you can't tell, I'm actually still hoarse from the Fight Laugh Feast conference because I spent a lot of time talking to y'all, and it was fun, but I don't have much of a voice left. So, before I lose it completely again, we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to be on the line. Not really. We're just going to play the interview we had, but hey, we'll go with it. We'll be on the line with Eric Kahn from the Hard Men podcast. So stick around, because you are on the Fight Laugh Feast Network, and you are listening to The Patriarchy. We'll be right back.
This is Polly the Transparent with an important public service announcement. These yahoos over at the Patriarchy Podcast collaborated with some other yahoos over at Confessional Wear to bring all their gun-toting, misogynistic, homophobic, Bible-thumping, brain-dead minion yahoos some Patriarchy merchandise. Yeah, they're actually selling t-shirts and coffee mugs to promote this trash. Even t-shirts for women. I'd say I can't believe it, but let's face it, these are the same buffoons that send boxes of Fruit Loops to my door, addressed to the Fruit Loop that lives there, who thinks he's a parrot. Intolerant pieces of garbage. Of course I'm a parrot. Anyways, this crap is available on confessionalwear.com under podcast collaborations. Not that any normal person would buy that junk. Squawk. Hey, lady. Polly needs his papers changed again. Lack of service around this place. It's unbelievable.
We'll be right back.
We're on the line with Eric Kahn. Eric is a freelance gun writer and has written for the NRA and Guns and Ammo magazine. He's been an editor-in-chief in the industry, attended seminary at Southern Baptist Seminary, has pastored in Colorado, and is married to his wife, Jerry, and together they have three sons. Eric, welcome to the patriarchy.
Thanks for having me, guys. Glad to be here.
Well, what our listeners don't know is that Eric and I have a little bit of history there because, you know, it says he went to Southern Seminary, and I think he had finished or was getting close to finishing when I first arrived there, and I came up with a phrase. I call it I got Eric conned.
Uh-oh.
Oh, no.
Oh, do tell the story.
Oh, so, no.
I worked at Valvoline, and actually, Eric was the manager. He's the one that hired me and gave me a chance. I know nothing about cars at the time, and so he gave me a chance to work, and I really enjoyed working at the store that we worked at. It was pretty intense. I think, Eric, was it like the most... The highest selling Valvoline in Louisville or something like that?
Yeah, I want to say we were definitely top three, especially in the summer and especially in February. So you're talking like 70 cars a day.
Oh, wow.
Which is quite a bit for a two bay store.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they would send us to another store if like they were have a shortage. And there was this one store I got sent to. And I was there less than five minutes when the woman manager came out and jumped all over me for pee being on the seat in the bathroom. I hadn't even been to the restroom.
Oh, no.
So, but that was this other store. And thankfully, it was only one day I was going to be there. And she was a nightmare. I would have hated to have to work for her. And then Eric came up to me and was like, I know you kind of want to get a promotion. And there's this other store coming open and they're going to have some spots open. And so you might want to get transferred there. And I was like, well, this other store, yeah, it's not the store where this woman is at, this other store. And so I'm like, okay, I'll get transferred. So you transfer me, and I show up for the first day of work, and guess who the new manager of that store was?
No.
Yes, it was that woman.
Oh, my gosh. I assure you that was not on purpose.
Oh, man.
Oh. And thus was born the Patriarchy Podcast.
Oh, that's rough. Yeah, there you go. Yes. Yeah, and yeah, that was the beginning.
I'm not bitter about it at all.
Oh, well, that's man. You seem to remember a lot of details about it.
Oh, man. Oh, that's so rough. Oh, that's awful.
Well, so welcome to our show. Tony, you got some hard questions for him?
Yeah, some hard questions for you. Yeah, well, hey, okay, so... Yeah, getting serious here. We were reading a couple articles yours. You wrote ahead of time. One of them was the feminization of the American pulpit. Excellent article. And one of the things you mentioned in that, or it was either that one or a different article too, but it goes along with it, is that you mentioned that a lot of men are starting to flock to alpha males like Joe Rogan, Jordan Peterson, Ben Shapiro, and the reason that they're doing it is because they don't find their pastors interesting anymore because of the lack of masculinity in the pulpit. So obviously we know you're not endorsing doing like the Gospel Coalition thing where you tailor your sermon completely to keep people in the pews. I know that. So for the sake of our audience though, to explain, can you kind of tell them, just expand on what is the problem in the pulpits that's causing this? And then also if you could briefly talk about what do you think the solution looks like to that?
Yeah, definitely. I think the biggest thing is that, so you look at the phenomenon with Jordan Peterson or Jocko Willink is another one of the guys that I mentioned. And I think what it should do for a Christian pastor, but for anybody who's concerned about the fact that in the Western church, you have predominantly female participation and attendance, it should cause us to say, hey, look, the church is clearly not providing answers on masculinity that men on really both sides, Christian and non-Christian, are looking for in terms of answering that question. What does it mean to be a man? The church isn't, for most people, it's not the place where you're going to find that answer. So originally what I was referencing was a Paul Maxwell video where he talked about what's referenced as the intellectual dark web. So again, that's these guys like Jordan Peterson. They've struck chords with men. And so what I kind of encourage people to do in that article is to consider why it is. It's not necessarily, like you said, it's not that we want to be the gospel coalition and have sort of these cheesy riffs on a popular theme. But we want to dig at the heart of the issue. And I want to ask, what is it about their writing and their style that is appealing and again, answering the questions that a lot of men are having? And so in the article, that's essentially what I do. It's looking at, you know, for instance, with Jordan Peterson, he speaks frankly. He'll generally, he'll address things in a very plain way. You know, men should stand up straight and put their shoulders back. And it becomes an analogy for facing conflict with courage and bravery, and these sorts of things. And again, men are identifying with that. On the flip side, you mentioned pastors. Most men, and I would put myself in this camp, I've never been able to go to a pastor and say, well, this guy's the paragon of masculinity. And for a long time, I didn't really know why that was. I would just say, you know, it's kind of weird. The pastor generally wants to talk about esoteric, weird music I've never heard of. They're talking about the thread count in their shirt. You would get a group of men together from like a local community, and they'd be talking about, yeah, thread counts and shirts, or, well, did you see the 17th century French play by so on and so forth? And these guys are like, I spent the day welding. We're going deer hunting this weekend.
Split logs or something. Yeah, exactly.
Right. There's just no way that you're going to identify with that. And so really, not only that article, but in others, what I've tried to do is say, okay, what happened to the pulpit that it became effeminate? And then again, how do we sort of fix some of those problems?
Well, why don't we go first ahead into how we got here? So how is it that really the church has been effeminized? You look at the Apostle Paul and you look at Christ Jesus and all the prophets, none of them that I would call effeminate.
Correct.
They worked with their hands. They were not afraid of work, yet they were intellectual at the same time. But I don't see them, as you said, chasing after 17th century musicals and plays. So
right.
How do we get here?
Yeah, I think there's, you know, that's a question that I've tried to answer. I think there's really two books that are helpful, at least have been kind of seminal for me in answering. And that is Leon Podol's book, The Church Impotent. He kind of takes a historical view on that. And then Ann Douglas on the feminization of the American culture. It's interesting because Podol's will kind of tell church history from, you know, the early church until present. And I think one thing he points out is that there was a main shift after, especially the patristic era, where you really had more shift away from monks and men-dominated church culture. Now you had nuns. They reference bridal mysticism, or Leon Podol's does, which is basically the beginning of what we have now on like a K-love thing, but it dates way back where you're talking about your relationship with Jesus as sort of this soft, sentimental, romantic experience. And if you read some of those accounts of the nuns, especially, and the women in the church who were writing, it's very erotic in its language. It kind of sounds like a very crass, like almost like Harlequin romance novel type, you know, woman's romance novel. And so that's kind of how the relationship with Jesus was envisioned. I think over time that became more and more prevalent through the centuries. And that really is doing two things. It's driving masculine men away, and it's attracting more and more women. And kind of the third leg on that stool is that it's attracting effeminate men to the pulpit. Mm-hmm. I think particular to the American context, Ann Douglas's book is really helpful basically about 1800, she tracks a change. And that change was a shift away from sort of the Jonathan Edwards Calvinistic patriarchy. And American culture began to be dominated by Unitarian liberalism. And really, a couple things happened with that. One was, A, the theology liberalized. But really, the pastors were put in this position where they said, okay, look, all the working men, the Industrial Revolution is going on, all the working men want nothing to do with the effeminate pastors who are here, and they want nothing to do with liberal theology. So how do we maintain our influence in the culture? And essentially the way that they answered that question was they said, well, we need to appeal to the women, and we need to appeal to ideologies that are politically left-leaning, social causes, you know, teetotaling, women's suffrage. So that was really what they built their ministry on. And so as they did that, their writing shifted heavily toward really sentimental writing. It's interesting, Ann Douglas will say, the one thing that they didn't write on was like theological treaties. You know, they were not writing theological works.
Mm-hmm.
They were writing for women who were obsessed with fictional novels, Little Women, and sort of I almost want to say just pristine and prissy Victorian picture of what society was like. And that's what the pastors did. And so you had publishing houses like Harper's, the printing press and all that stuff became more prolific. And so now these pastors had an audience. And so I think as that happened, there was just a widening of that gulf between masculinity, the pulpit, and women. And you can kind of trace that all the way to today, where, you know, churches still are predominantly female. Pastors are predominantly effeminate, and the men away from church, unless they happen to be, you know, dragged there by their wife.
So in a way, they kind of took the Delilah route to get to Samson, I guess you could say. They kind of went through
the
women to get to the men, because they knew that was a weakness. That's an interesting backstory on that. Yeah, that's very interesting. Well, let's move forward here then a little bit too. So we got the problem. We got how we got there. How do we get out of it? Like, what do you think a solution looks like, or the solution, a solution, if there's multiples, what do you think that looks like? How do we get there?
Well, I think a big part of it is, A, looking at how pastors are recruited and trained. So one of the things that Ann Douglas talks about in her book is that, and this was fascinating to me because it's something I never would have thought of, but they said that, you know, most of the men who are healthy and the young boys, they went off to work in factories and be with their fathers, and they went into politics and they were among men. Mm-hmm. And what happened was a lot of the sickly young boys who stayed at home and spent all their time with their mother, those were the ones who were recruited for the pastorate. Mm-hmm. So they were raised in a women's world. They were raised to really have a taste for academia and high literature, and they weren't accustomed to working with their hands or really using their bodies in a manly physical way. Well, fast forward today, how do you solve that problem? I think one thing is we have to do something about the overly academic nature of pastoral training. I think Southern Seminary is a good example. There's obviously, when I was there, there was good teaching happening, but it's a very Ivy League experience. It's very academic, sort of the bow tie culture. Not to say that everyone who goes there is like that, but I think when you're going to put that level of stress on, look, we need to be accredited by major universities and we want to play in the sandbox of the other intellectual elites in our culture. First of all, that in and of itself is going to be a detractor to a lot of working men who would be more inclined to a masculine demeanor and masculine virtues. I would love to see the training happening in the local church among other pastors who are godly and masculine.
Mm-hmm.
The irony of this is I remember talking with Al Mohler. It was sort of a small closed group meeting that we had early on, first or second year I was in seminary, and he was trying to get feedback from students and stuff like that. And one of the things he brought up is he said that seminary was an indictment against the church. He said if the church was doing its job, seminary would not need to exist.
Interesting.
Because the pastors would be overseeing that training.
Right.
I think that's going to be a difficult one to solve because so many churches are ill-equipped to do that right now. But I think groups like Moscow, Bloomington, they've at least started to try to answer that question. How can we train pastors locally? How can we do it in a way that doesn't force them to jeopardize family life? It doesn't force them to stop working and make their wife go work a job. So I think that's a huge part of it, is how we're going to train. And again, tied to how are you going to recruit these men? It was said in a lot of the early church literature in the 1800s and the 1900s, again, that a lot of the pastors were recruited because it was like the old ladies in the church were like, oh, he's so cute. Just pinch him on the cheek. We'll put him in a pulpit. They were sort of the pretty boys, right? And you've all been there. Like, it's easy to sort of tailor your ministry or decide what you're going to do because a sweet old lady told you to do it.
Yeah.
But again, we need godly men and godly pastors who are going to, you know, you guys, Joseph, you need to be looking for the next generation of men and saying, look, how can I find guys who are, they're manly. They want to be manly. They know how to work with their hands. They know how to put in a full day's labor. They resonate with the people of our community because of their integrity. And they have a gifting for the office. How do I take that guy and train him for the ministry?
So in a couple of your articles, actually, you talked also about Christian media. I mean, we just touched on that a bit too, and kind of how we got here and the printing press and most books are bought by women. I know at one point in there, you also said that someone had an idea for a solution to that. You thought it was a little naive, I think you said in the article. But what do you think the solution is to that part of it? The solution is to books and media being so effeminate as well.
Yeah, I think that's one of the dangers. Paul Maxwell had referenced, he had worked, I think, at Moody Publishers and Desiring God and the Gospel Coalition, or at least worked for them. I know he was an acquisitions editor, but he was the one that said, well, you know, we need like Christianity Today. We need them to have a department that's thoroughly masculine. And that's where I said, look, newsflash, that's not going to happen. And if you've seen anything that Christianity Today has been publishing in the last year, they're not interested in robust masculinity.
That's for sure.
The things that we would describe
or Christianity, yeah.
Yeah. Or Christianity, yeah. So it's
they're interested in today. They should just change their name to Today.
Right.
Yeah.
Today. That sort of thing I think is not going to happen, but where people I think are making headway is stuff you guys are doing, building out your podcast, Cross Politics, sort of that network. A lot of those guys are, they're sound on masculinity and biblical sexuality. So I think just continuing to grow those forms. I think part of it though is recognizing, I've had to do this myself, if you want to preach and teach boldly on masculinity and biblical sexuality in this culture, you will be hated.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah.
You're not going to be popular. You're going to have people who, you know, I've had stuff on Twitter and Facebook that gets pulled, right? Because it doesn't meet their community standards. We have to be willing to endure that and say, look, that means we're doing the right thing. That means the message is important. And find creative ways to do it. In the shooting world, I will say this. There's a guy named John Lovell, and he does the Warrior Poet Society.
Yeah.
And you guys might have seen this.
I'm actually wearing his hat right now. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that's a good example. You're probably familiar recently, like they're saying, we need to get off of YouTube. We need to have our own network. you know, those people can't pull posts, they can't pull down our videos. And then they're building a network. And I think that's, that sort of thing is great. We need to continue to do that. We need to continue to find ways to publish books through Crossway and other outlets that are not going to restrict the freedom to speak on those issues. I'm even leery about Amazon. You know, you can do self-publishing and stuff like that, but, you know, at the end of the day, they have the right to pull the plug on something that they find offensive or or hateful.
Yeah, I think these networks that are starting to come out, I mean, ours, Warhorn Media, and now John has, you know, Warrior Poet Society's network coming out. I do think that's one of the ways forward, especially for media, because, yeah, I mean, they can, I mean, yeah, they can pull your app out of the app store, but there's other ways around that to getting it out to people. I mean, Christchurch got their app pulled recently from Google Play for talking about how to respond to the coronavirus. I mean, of all things, I mean, and so there was a point there where I actually hosted their app temporarily somewhere else so people could download it. And then it came back into the Google Play store. But there's always, there's gotta be, I think there definitely has to be forethought in that, trying to think through, you know, they're, I mean, just expecting really what the Bible said, right? That, you know, we're going to be hated for this. They're going to try and silence it. And to try and figure out how to get through that, but yeah, we'd like to have John Lovell on sometime too. Actually, you mentioned that he's a great guy.
So Eric, we've been talking about kind of like pastors and kind of large scale structural changes that need to occur, and then we're talking about how pastors can be thinking through things. But what about let's talk to the man that's not a pastor and he's. He's got no calling to a pastor's role or necessarily eldership in a church. What can that man do to be a solution in this kind of problem that we're facing? What can just maybe the young man in the church or the older man in the church that's fed up with the femininity being overwhelming, what can he do?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, I think that's a great point, Joseph. And I think first and foremost, you look at the individual level and you can say, well, fortunately, there are good resources out there. There's good books. That's kind of one tier that you can read about masculinity. Obviously, there's a lot of garbage out there. There's a lot of secular nonsense that's really popular. So you gotta weed through that. But finding good resources, Doug Wilson's stuff is really good. Yeah, you've mentioned Warhorn, cross politics shows, stuff like that. So finding things that are going to encourage you, things that are going to be sound and solid teaching. The other one I would mention is Michael Foster and Non Tenet on It's Good to Be a Man. I've really benefited from their material. And Michael, we will usually have a bunch of other resources, books to read on masculinity. So you can start there for yourself. You can start by getting your own household in order. Which is essential. Mm-hmm. I've written about that as well.
Absolutely.
That's really where a lot of this change happens, right? It's not by us having a podcast and then bemoaning the societal ills. Helpful that is. It's informative. It helps us understand the position we're in. But ultimately, we don't want to talk about war. We want to be warriors. Exactly. And so that's where we need to go with this. I think having some of those resources has really been beneficial to me and other men. The second thing I would say about it, though, is you need to connect with other men who share the same commitment to biblical sexuality and masculinity. If you can find that in a local church, I would just plead with men to do that. Mm-hmm. It's great to connect online. It's great to connect with other people around the country, and I've been super encouraged to do that. But it needs to be local. You need to have a pastor that can look at you and say, hey, And I'm speaking to myself here, where he can say to me, hey, that was a great article on masculinity. You know, one of your boys is really struggling in this category. What are you doing about that? Mm-hmm. So they hold me accountable to that standard as well. And yeah, just you're always going to learn from other fathers who are doing a better job in some areas than you are. Older, wiser pastors, you need those things in your life. And again, that's part of the networking that I think that we have to do as a part of encouragement and exhortation. So find ways to do that. There's definitely resources if you're willing to work at it.
Well, hey, we're actually at the end here on our time limit. But if somebody would get in contact with you, if like they want to email you, read some more articles, can you give our listeners a way to contact you? Maybe reach out, email, call if you have a number or not.
Yeah, absolutely. So you can find me through ericconn.com, ericconn.com. There's a way to submit a contact request there. You can comment with your email address and I can reach out to you. Or you can reach me by email at conman, that's C-O-N-N.
Oh, wow.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you like where that's going? conman5000 at Gmail. And the one thing about that, it's C-O-N-N-M-A-N-N 5000 at gmail.com.
All right.
You're going to remember it, though.
That's true.
I've had that since I was in high school.
That's true. Well, hey, man, thank you for coming on. This has been an excellent time, and I have appreciated your articles. I know Joseph has. He sent me a few I didn't have before, and yeah, we would love to have you back on sometime, but thank you very much. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, guys.
That was our interview with Eric Conn from the Hard Men Podcast. You are listening to The Patriarchy on the Fight Laugh Feast Network. We'll be right back. Well, folks, that is the episode for this week. We hope you enjoyed that lost interview with Eric Conn from the Hard Men Podcast. Go check out his podcast and go check out his website where he has some excellent articles. It's ericconn.com. That's ericconn.com. Two of those articles that we just talked about in the interview are on there along with a bunch of others. Go check them out and check out his podcast. So I don't have much else to say, and I also want to save my voice because as of you listening to this right now, we'll be recording our main episode for the Patriarchy Podcast, which will release next week on the same day on Tuesday. So I want to save my voice, so I'm just going to say this. If you are not yet a Fight Laugh Feast club member and you want to support our show, go to fightlaughfeast.com, click to sign up to become a member, and use the code PATRIARCHY when you do. There is no other code to use. Just use our code. There are actually other codes, but you should only use our code if you want to support our show. That's the code PATRIARCHY at fightlaughfeast.com. Click to sign up to become a member because you don't just support us. You support the network, you support all the other shows, and you get a bunch of extra content behind the scenes. We do have an app as well, so search in either of the app stores for iOS or Android. For the Fight Laugh Feast Network, you can download the app, get access to all of our shows, past episodes, and if you're a member, get access to behind the scenes members content as well. If you're a member, you also get some coffee, t-shirt, depends on what level you sign up for, but it's well worth it, and it does really help support our show. We really, really appreciate all of you members that have already signed up. I've talked to a lot of you at the Fight Laugh Feast Conference. You guys are awesome. I can't say it enough. That was a great conference, and I really, really enjoyed meeting all of you, and I hope to see you guys again next year. If you want to get some of our Patriarchy merchandise and any of the shirts you actually saw me wearing at the conference, we have a lot more available now. They're at confessionalwear.com. You click on podcast collaborations, and you click on our show, and you can buy any of our shirts. We have mostly men's shirts available. We do have two women's shirts and a few more coming out soon, and two coffee mugs, and there's more to come. And yes, we are working on trucker hats, and yes, for goodness sakes, we are still working on stickers. They'll be out soon. Tanner Cartwright, I'm talking to you. So until next time, if you have not yet bowed your knee to Christ, repent and believe. And if you have, this is our call to you. Build, fight, protect, lead. This is the Patriarchy.